I'm Mark Purcell, and this is the Book Club at 91.7. A book that really has struck some resonance in me is a book from Michael Harris. It's called The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. Michael points out in the book that those of us born before 1985 are the last remnants of folks who remember life before the Internet. Michael Harris, joining me on the phone from Vancouver to talk about the book. Welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you for having me.
I told you before we went on the air, and I'll say it again, you really struck a chord in me when it came to The End of Absence, because despite being connected, despite being able to, you know, find out whatever I need to find out, whenever I need to find out, and wherever I need to find out, I'm feeling less satisfied these days, and it seems that all those screens in our life have really robbed us of that absence. I mean, I'm talking about simply driving home from work when it used to be I didn't have a phone, and that was a little bit of solitude in the car. But now, with the phone there, anybody can get me anytime. What set you out on your journey here to write this book, The End of Absence?
Well, it was like you're describing, this sort of ambient level anxiety in my life where I was constantly connected every moment of my life. Like about half of the American population, I think, I slept with my phone on my bedside table. And when I woke up, instead of thinking, what am I going to do with my day the way I always used to, I had suddenly started waking up and having as my first thought, what did I miss? You know, so everything was always about not missing out on some new piece of content or music video or whatever. And eventually, it was almost like, I don't know if you if you give a kid 10 packs of cigarettes to try and keep him from smoking, you know, I kind of overdosed on digital connection and just decided, oh my God, I had to break away from this. And I ended up actually giving myself a kind of digital detox. I took 1 month off from the internet and away from the cell phone. And that kind of allowed me to try and recapture my pre-internet brain.
you account for that time in your book, The End of Absence, and I found it very amusing as you were going, kind of keeping a diary throughout that that techno-free
exactly.
month of August, and it was a hoot, especially when you broke your fast. But I wanted to talk about the book where you say, you know, if you were born before 1985, then you know what life is like both with the internet and without, and you are making the pilgrimage from before to after, and that's something I really hadn't stopped to think about for very long, that that really, yes, today we are the internet. You can't escape it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's an interesting historical comparison. If we look at the invention of the printing press in the 15th century, I mean, a lot of people have talked about how a new invention like that can radically transform the way people see the world. You know, it was really a progenitor of the Enlightenment and the Reformation. But the difference between 15th century culture and ours is that when the printing press was invented, it actually took centuries before it was affecting people on a day-to-day basis, whereas we are seeing a wholesale transformation of our lives within that single generation, which is those of us born before 1985. So that's what's so crazy to me, is the fact that we actually get to live through this Gutenberg moment of our own and live on both sides of the revolution. I don't think that's ever happened, that a single generation has seen such massive change in their own lifetime.
And I know from my perspective with children that it's interesting to see how much it's become ingrained in their life. And you do quote the Kaiser Foundation report in 2010 that said 8 to 18-year-olds were devoting 7 hours and 38 minutes each day to their devices, and many of those were multitasking, so they're really spending more time with that. And it's shocking for someone that does know the before.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so easy to forget what being a child was like, even in the 1980s, right? That's when I grew up, in the 80s. And when I was working on the book, I did this kind of, well, I worked at remembering that childhood of mine. And, you know, it really was full of these long patches of disconnection. We would go on family trips out on the boat. We'd be on islands, and I would write letters to my friends. And there was this very sentimental experience of absence or solitude, which is simply not possible in a constantly connected world. Over the Christmas break, I was at home and visiting family, and there were some two-year-old nephews of mine who are just obsessed with their iPads. And, as somebody who doesn't have a child, it's very easy for me to, raise my eyebrows at parents who are foisting iPads on their kids. But I can see why they're doing it, because it is the best babysitter in the world. The children are so, quote-unquote, well-behaved when they have that iPad in front of them. But it really does make me wonder, well, what's happening to that child's brain if we're bathing it in that kind of a technological environment.
Yeah, what kind of price will be paid? I'm speaking with Michael Harris. He's the author of The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. Available where books are sold. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And by the way, the book won Canada Council's Governor General's Literary Award for Nonfiction in 2014. And you talk about the brain, and I've wondered about it too. I know that my granddaughter, just past the 1 year old, picked up an iPod and just started mimicking what her parents were doing. And boy, she can make that screen fly. And she wasn't even 18 months old when she was doing this. And I do wonder about what happens to the brain. And you do touch in your book, The End of Absence, about the neuroplasticity and how the internet really is reshaping our brains.
Yeah. Well, the basic principle of neuroplasticity is that neurons that fire together wire together. And in common sense terminology, what that basically means is if you encourage a certain kind of environment, your brain is going to get better and better at operating in that environment and worse off in other environments. So what we see is American Academy of Pediatrics actually putting out warnings saying if you have a child under 2 years old, they actually think they should have no recreational screen time, no screen time really at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if children under 2 years do have screen time, they are finding associations between that and heightened rates of attention deficit disorder. So the neuroplasticity research, while it is definitely in that kind of pioneering stage, I don't think that the numbers have only been coming out in the last 10 years or so, it does seem to be pointing toward the fact that you can't spend a third of your life looking at a screen and not have some kind of change on the brain. And I think anecdotally we've all seen that. For example, you can't look at a Twitter feed for 3 hours and then try and read War and Peace. Your brain just can't downshift, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do find that the media environment that we bathe our brain in, it changes the way that our brains operate.
You went and visited the futurist Douglas Copeland, the best-selling writer, and you told him you were going to take this vacation from technology, and he said, man, you couldn't pay me to go back in time. And really, people these days, I mean, you see it in daily life, how attached people are to both their devices and the internet. Do you feel we're really paying a high price for that fascination?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think that it's a question of technology being good or evil. I think it's really just about technology being beautiful and dangerous, like the way that your carving knife in the kitchen is beautiful and dangerous, and you have to know how to use it, right? I mean, to Copeland's point, it's not that going backwards in time is actually that attractive a premise, right? The past, would I want to go back there? No, I kind of like talking to you on my iPhone. I don't want to go back to pioneering times. But what the research is pointing to and what my work while writing this book has pointed me toward is that in the same way that we need healthy food diets, we have to create healthy media diets for ourselves, because those moments of absence, which are so integral to our emotional lives and our mental lives, those aren't coming automatically anymore. So as much as we love using our technologies and our devices, we do need to actually engineer moments of absence back into our lives. So it's just really about being proactive, I think.
And it's about you talk about absence and seeking absence, and it's more than just turning off the phone and wandering away. You talk about, at one point in the book, it's as much about absence as it is about solitude. Explain the difference between absence and solitude.
Well, I used absence in the title as a kind of catch-all term, in fact. So it includes things like solitude, daydreaming, reverie. I've become more and more, it's interesting you bring up solitude, because I've become more and more interested in specifically the relationship between creativity and solitude. So I think that although there are exciting new ways that our minds can connect with each other online, I suspect that to have really breakthrough thoughts, we actually need to take all that information that we gather in the crowd and then go off into our fortress of solitude or whatever and yes. Process it through the experience of our personal lives. I think that's where you get real innovation, is when the experience of a collective is mined, but then looked at from a solitary and unique perspective.
We just have a few minutes left, and I've lent more than once, I've expressed my reaction to your book, and that, oh, yes. Have other people also reacted in the same way, going, you know, yeah, maybe I am overconnected? And what has been the reaction?
Oh, yeah, it seems to have touched on something. Mostly people, which is very gratifying for me, mostly people have been saying that the book describes something that they had in the back of their brain, that kind of anxiety that they hadn't quite articulated, which is really, you know, what I was hoping for. It was something that is affecting all of us, but we don't often read the history of our technologies or do a lot of deep thinking about the ways that these screens are changing the way we see ourselves. So that's been really helpful. Other than that, there's been some critique, which tends to come from digital natives who feel like the book is in some way trying to school them. But, you know, yesterday I was doing actually a Skype Q&A with a class of maybe 19-year-olds at the University of British Columbia. And these kids had all read the book as part of their classwork. And I was really surprised to find how on board they were with the book's ideas. I thought maybe they would take umbrage to this kind of nostalgic look at solitude or absence. But they saw it in their own lives. They saw the value of those things. Even while, I should mention, like five of the girls in the back row were texting on their phones the whole time that we were doing it.
Of course. Well, just before we go, I want to ask, you know, through writing the book and doing the research for your book, The End of Absence, how has it changed your digital habits, if at all?
Well, one of the, you know, the ironies of writing a book about absence that does fairly well is that you end up being more connected than ever before, right?
True.
Doing these interviews and responding to all these different emails, it has actually really made me have to safeguard those moments of solitude in my own life, because generally, you know, when I was writing the book, I had a whole year of obscurity and solitude, really, which was the perfect environment. And the success of the book has made me, unfortunately, have to work a little bit harder to carve out those moments of absence in my own life. But I am doing it.
Well, you're inspiring me to do the same, Michael. So greatly appreciate that, and thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Michael Harris, his book is The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. It can open your eyes and teach you a few things. I strongly recommend it. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org. The Book Club at 91.7.